Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket today, another status conference in the Chad Daybell matter. But guess what? This one's a little different. The prosecution made a major concession that the defense wanted. Next, the Brian Laundry manhunt continues. Yep, nobody's found him yet. Then we have Alex Murdoch's wife. Even she knew not all was right in the world just before her death. Josh Duggar rhymes with hugger. Well, he gets an order from the judge today. Free Britney. And then our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. The channel where a practicing criminal defense attorney actually explains the facts, the procedure, and the law to cold cases and current true crime cases. Welcome. Now, if you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit the bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live. And as always, do not forget to leave us a comment below about what we've talked about today. And guess what? We had a lot of people yesterday talk about our comments at the beginning. And guess what? Let's talk about it. It worked out well. Everyone was polite, respectful. We don't always have to agree. Sometimes we can agree to disagree. Now, as always, remember, if you can't watch us on YouTube, you can watch us on your favorite podcasting apps anytime. And that's not just today's video. That's all the older videos as well. And boy, we have a lot of videos and podcasts that you can go back and listen to. Before we start with the docket, let's talk about crimetalkprep.com. Okay? There's a lot of uncertainty in the world. You don't really know what's happening. What is going to take place? Emergencies happen. Natural disasters happen. You have to be prepared. You have to be prepared to be able to take care of your family. Go to crimetalkprep.com. Guess what? You can sign up for your 3-month emergency food meal prep kit and save $100. Go to crimetalkprep.com. You'll be happy you did. It's the responsible thing to do. All right, let's get to the docket. First, there was another status conference, and you gotta love the judge there in Idaho handling the Daybell and Vallow matters. He loves to have status conferences, to schedule conferences, to schedule a status conference, and yet finally, on October 6th, we were going to have the hearing regarding the change of venue that was filed by the defense. It's been out there for a long time. It's been pending. And the defense comes in today at the hearing, and you can watch the hearing, so I'm not making this stuff up. Check out the hearing. Frank can put the link in here. But the prosecution shows up and says, hey, judge, we stipulate, we confess the defense motion for a change of venue. We believe that neither Lori Vallow nor Chad Daybell will get a fair trial in the jurisdiction that we are in. All right, you would think case over in the sense, well, issue over, that is resolved as it relates to the hearing. Nope. Judge says, well, we're going to have a hearing. Everyone's kind of like, well, judge, we thought this would be resolved. And the judge says, yeah, I understand that. That's great. And what he didn't say is, this is a death penalty case. And so the judge is going to do everything he has to do to dot his I's and cross his T's to make sure that the appropriate record was made and that some evidence was presented so that the court can find and make the record that yes, there is sufficient evidence, some evidence to show that they cannot receive a fair trial and therefore it should be moved. And then the issue becomes, where does the trial go? That's right, gets interesting, right? So normally when there's a change of venue issue, the court notifies like their Supreme Court and the Supreme Court says, fine, we're gonna transfer this case to another jurisdiction. I'm going to check in to see exactly how Idaho handles that procedure, but that's normally the way it's been done everywhere that I have run into this particular issue. So then we will hopefully find out once the court grants has the hearing on the 6th, then basically tells the higher court, Supreme Court, hey, we need a change of venue. Where do we go? Well, what does that mean? Only thing that changes is the jury pool and the location of the trial. All the players stay the same. The judge will stay there. The defense attorneys will remain the same. And the prosecutors will remain the same. And normally, the only thing that will take place is the trial in the new location, not all the other proceedings as well. So that's going to get very, very interesting indeed. And then, of course, now we're going to have to fly to Idaho to check out the new location to see. Hopefully it's a populated area, maybe somewhere very nice where all those billionaires fly into Idaho, so that we can go check it out as well. Is that wrong of me to think that? I don't think so. Just trying to make sure we bring you all the best facts. Now, a little other news as it relates to Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. The coroner has finally released their official report as to the death of Charles Vallow. I'm going to give you the rundown here real quick, just so you all know. First of all, he's dead. And he died from perforating gunshot wounds to the chest and perforating gunshot wounds to the abdomen. And of course, someday, maybe Lori Vallow will be brought to trial as it relates to that matter, but not until Idaho gets done with her first, assuming they do get to her at all, depending on her progress as it relates to restoration of competency. We'll have to wait and see. Next on the docket, Gabby Petito / Brian Laundrie update. As the search continues for Brian Laundrie, obviously, as we know, the person of interest in the disappearance and homicide case of Gabby Petito. Let's do a quick timeline for people who aren't familiar. We got a lot of requests for the timeline. First, August 12th, police in Moab, Utah respond to reports of disorderly conduct involving a couple. They interviewed Petito, the police did, and Laundrie, who were described as having engaged in some sort of altercation, according to the police report. Neither Petito nor Laundrie were charged with any crime. Then August 30th, Laundrie is accused of using a debit card and PIN number for accounts that did not belong to him between the dates of August 30th and September 1 of this year. Now, according to the federal indictment, that all took place in the District of Wyoming, which is how they established jurisdiction, as well as other places. Then September 1st, Laundrie returns to his family home in Northport, Florida. He was without Petito, with whom he had been traveling on a cross-country trip, obviously in the van. The van was actually owned by Gabby Petito, and the van was recovered at his residence. September 6th through 8th, Laundrie and his parents, Chris and Roberta, stayed at the Fort DeSoto campground, according to officials, as well as confirmed by the family attorney. Now, the sheriff's office has stated it is not currently investigating the campground, and it is unaware of any confirmed sightings of Brian Laundrie. September 10th, the weekend, Karen Aberts, a neighbor of Laundrie's, said the last time she saw Brian at the family home was sometime on the weekend of September 10th. Gabby Petito's family reported her missing on Saturday, September 11th. Jump to September 14th, Laundrie's parents told police on September 17th that was the last time they saw him, September 14th. He had left their home with a backpack and said he was going to camp in the nearby Carlton Reserve. On September 19th, Petito's remains were found in Wyoming at the Teton National Forest. Her death was initially ruled a homicide by the coroner. Well, now there's questions surrounding a phone allegedly purchased before Brian Laundrie's disappearance, which may have been answered by an attorney representing the Laundrie's family. It says that the date the phone was bought remains unclear, but FBI agents reportedly pulled security footage from an AT&T store in Northport, Florida, and discovered that Laundrie and an older woman went into the store on September 14th, the day that Laundrie disappeared. They reportedly bought a burner phone on the same day. What's a burner phone? That's basically a phone where you can prepay it. It's not registered necessarily to you. And you can normally give any name you want for those burner phones. Normally, I've seen lots of clients over the years, they use burner phones And they put in words like Scarface or Al Capone, something along those lines, so they don't have to use their real name. And guess what? People at the store don't care. Now, the attorney, Stephen Bertolini, released a statement saying that he can confirm that a phone was purchased on September 4, 2021. Brian opened an account with AT&T for that phone, not a burner phone, Bertolini said in a text to reporters. It was also confirmed that Brian left that phone at home the day he went for the hike on September 14th, and the FBI now has that phone. Bertolini, the attorney, told a different story to news outlets saying that the FBI has Laundrie's phone, but claimed he didn't know the exact date the phone was purchased. He said, I never confirmed that the date of the phone was purchased, as I do not have the specific date, only that a phone was purchased and Brian left it at home the day he went for a hike in the nature preserve, and the FBI now has the phone. Otherwise, no comment. I'm not exactly sure why the attorney, Mr. Bertolini, is commenting in public, even on behalf of the family. What good is going to come from that whatsoever? I don't know. He should probably stop, in my humble opinion. Now, the FBI declined to clear up any confusion, stating that they can't comment due to an ongoing investigation. As we mentioned yesterday, the family attorney, he confirmed that Brian and his parents did in fact go to this campsite some 64 miles away at the nature reserve, where the FBI and local law enforcement have been looking for Laundrie since he vanished now 15 days ago. The attorney also says that all three left the campground together, and a Florida County Sheriff's Office has now turned in surveillance video of the campground, but they haven't said what the video apparently shows. The family departure from the park was 6 days after Brian Laundrie returned to his Florida home alone in the white van, and he and Petito obviously didn't get to finish their cross-country trip. The overnight camping trip was also 4 days before Petito's mother, Nicholas Schmidt, reported her missing on September 11th, though investigators have said the young woman's cell phone had been turned off since about August 27th. Now, a Florida couple claims they've camped next to Brian Laundrie and his family and may have captured him in a selfie to prove it. Marcy and Kenny Newsom of Fort Myers, Florida, camped next to the now missing Brian Laundrie and his parents after checking in to the Fort DeSoto Park on Labor Day. A couple states that in the background, there's a guy walking across the field, Marcy Newman claims, and the photo is blurry, so it's unclear if the photo showed Laundrie, but Newsom said the three campers she saw kept to themselves during the stay. They were there, and then they weren't, according to Marcy Newsom. Now, Brian Laundrie's attorney, Stephen Bertolini, confirmed Tuesday that Brian did, in fact, go camping, as we mentioned, with his parents, but insisted that they all returned together. In a new report, apparently dozens of 911 calls were made at the Laundrie's home, some even before she was reported missing. There were at least 46 911 calls or response requests related to the Northport, Florida home of now fugitive Brian Laundrie. There were at least two calls placed on September 10th, one just before 4 p.m. and one just before 6:30 p.m., and three more were placed on September 11th, the day Petito's mother, Nicole Schmidt, filed a missing persons report with the Suffolk County Police Department in New York. Police returned on September 14th, 15th, 16th, and twice on the 17th of September. The records do not indicate who placed the 911 calls, and all summaries have been redacted, only providing brief descriptions such as problem settled, no police action needed, or report submitted. The most recent records provided by the police were from about 5:10 p.m. on Monday, with calls earlier in the day at 8:06 a.m., 8:28 a.m., 1:29 p.m., 2:45 p.m., and 4:13 p.m. Apparent reasons for the 46 calls include disturbance, follow-up investigation, patrol check, and public service. Meanwhile, apparently tensions are boiling over at the Brian Laundrie's block in Northport, Florida. A fight just broke out in front of the home involving one of the family's neighbors. The neighbors in a red shirt started screaming at a couple of protesters who have set up camp outside the Laundrie's home, accusing the couple of stepping on his property. The man, 48-year-old Angelo Zappacosta, is accused of shoving the other man in the video in the chest and taking a swing at him. Now, according to the alleged victim, Zapacosta was upset over him reportedly being on his property days earlier, hanging out wanted posters for laundry. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I get it. The people can stay there on the street, but they do not have a right to go on other people's property, and they don't have a right to interfere with their quiet peace and enjoyment of their property. And I'm not sure exactly what they think that's going to happen. Do they think the stress is actually going to cause the parents of Brian Laundrie to somehow say, fine, I know where he is, go get him? I don't think so. Just, you know, I get it. Go help. Go search a field somewhere. I don't think Brian Laundrie is going to show up at that house. I just don't think it's going to happen. And I don't think pressure on the family is going to do anything either. There's a lot of people looking for Brian Laundrie. They could probably use some help. Last night, I actually saw reports of some people that have volunteered their time saying that they thought they'd have Brian Laundrie in custody within an hour. One thing I've learned in the practice of law, ladies and gentlemen, is you don't make promises you can't keep. Bottom line, all you can do is to do your best and to tell the truth. That's all you can do. Next on the docket, the Murdoch case. Well, Maggie Murdoch, the now deceased wife of the ex-South Carolina legal scion, Alex Murdoch, saw a divorce attorney back in April, just 6 weeks before she and her son Paul were shot on the family estate. Now, Murdoch's perceived need to help Buster get a large payoff from an insurance claim and the alleged misuse of firm funds pointed to possible problems in the family's finances. Maggie Murdoch had similar questions about the family finances and actually hired a forensic accountant right before she was murdered. The date is unclear when that took place, but it could coincide with Maggie's trip in late April to meet with the divorce attorney in Charleston. She didn't pay close attention to the family money, according to people, and where it came from. But now she was starting to look into it. Alex Murdoch's co-workers also said that in the weeks leading up to the murders, Maggie had stopped coming to the office to have lunch with her husband. Money seemed to be frequent at the heart of the Murdoch's marital troubles. Now, Alex Murdoch currently facing three lawsuits, two of which relate to the fatal boat crash in 2019 with his intoxicated, now deceased son, Paul Murdoch, reportedly at the wheel. Another passenger in Paul's boat that night, Connor Cook, has also filed suit claiming Alex Murdoch tried to frame him as to being the driver of the boat, and Alex Murdoch was released on his own recognizance when he was arraigned on the insurance fraud charges and allowed to go back to a rehabilitation center somewhere in Atlanta. He was ordered to hand in his passport, but he is not wearing a GPS monitor. Investigators have announced no suspects in the murder of Paul and Maggie Murdoch. I'm no genius, ladies and gentlemen, but if there's one person that has a reason to go far, far away, to go when you gotta go, I would think it'd be Alex Murdoch. I hope he is on lockdown at that rehabilitation center and then he is getting some good help. Otherwise, he may pull a Brian Laundrie and be on his way somewhere. Next on the docket, Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger. Well, a federal judge has denied motion seeking to dismiss the charges against the former reality TV star, I guess, Josh Duggar. U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Brooks on Monday also denied motions to suppress all statements Duggar made to investigators and photos that were taken off of Duggar's computer when he was in custody. The motion to suppress the evidence took Duggar's cell phone before he could call his lawyer and questioned him without his lawyer. Remember, they can't do that. Now, the cell phone was seized while authorities executed a search warrant at the used car dealership run by Duggar back in November of 2019. Now, Duggar, who appeared in TLC's 19 Kids and Counting, was charged in April with two counts of downloading and possessing child. He's accused of using the internet in May of 2019 to download and possess inappropriate material, to say the least, some of which depict sexual abuse of children younger than 12. The prosecutors contend that Duggar was never placed in custody when the search warrant was being served and that he voluntarily chose to speak with investigators. Now, Duggar's lawyers argued in their motion to dismiss that the government failed to preserve evidence that could have helped Duggar's defense. The judge denied that motion. Judge Brooks has set the jury trial for November 30th. We're literally 2 months away from a trial in this particular case. I would anticipate, in light of the motions hearings can be a very watershed moment in a case. And at this point in time, the defendant, Josh Duggar, is going to have to really decide, do I go to trial and get that trial tax called no acceptance of responsibility under the federal sentencing guidelines? Or is he going to do what he can to minimize his sentence? In cases like this, it's very tough because more than likely, a lot of the defendants deny to their family that they knew anything about this. And so if they enter a plea of guilty, the family will feel somewhat betrayed. Now, I don't know anything that's happened to the Duggar family. I'm just telling you what I've seen many, many times over the years in these types of cases. And then there's other types of cases where the people will say, I will never plead to these charges. I will see you in trial, even though the evidence is quite overwhelming, as it appears to be in Mr. Duggar's case. All right. It just shows you, you got to know who you're dealing with, and you just never know. Let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, we're back. Free Britney. On Wednesday, a California judge suspended Britney Spears' father acting as the conservator of her estate. Superior Court Judge Brenda Penny appointed certified public accountant John Zabel as the temporary conservator. Britney Spears and her attorney selected Zabel as the replacement. As Mr. Spears had said again and again, all he wants is the best for his daughter. Now, of course, it took a long drawn out court battle to get there, and it looked like he may have some trouble himself when they look at what he was paying himself to, well, take care of her money. Watching other people's money apparently can be very, very expensive and time-consuming. Just ask Mr. Spears. Now, Ms. Spears wants to terminate the conservatorship, and she believes that she can handle her own life. Mr. Spears believed that she should get that chance, and Jamie Spears has been his daughter's conservator going back to 2008, and earlier this month, he filed a petition to finally terminate the conservatorship. Britney Spears, like we said, 39 years old, has called the ongoing conservatorship abusive, revealing in court documents that she wants to marry her boyfriend and have children, but the court-mandated arrangement has prevented her from getting a doctor's appointment to remove her birth control. Another court date will be scheduled to complete the termination of the conservatorship before the end of 2021. And then finally today on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Joel Lewis. Police have charged Joel Lewis, who swiped two watches worth $39.76 from a Walmart in Largo, Florida on Saturday afternoon. A store employee provided police with a description of the suspect to include the Gronkowski jersey that he was wearing. Now, Lewis, who was hiding in a bush near the Walmart, was apprehended within minutes of the theft being reported. Now, still in his Gronkowski jersey, Lewis was collared after a short foot chase. He reportedly confessed to stealing the watch and apologized for his actions. So obviously, Mr. Lewis accepted some responsibility. He's at least got that going for him. It is a low dollar value. But Mr. Lewis, as we have said before, and no, I'm not trying to tell people how to commit crimes, but identity is one of the things they have to prove. And so when somebody says it was the guy in the Gronkowski jersey that did it, that's pretty identifying, right? It's kind of like tattoos on your face, pretty identified. So when you're still wearing the Gronkowski jersey and they find the watches, there, it's an open and shut case. And then when you confess, it's even worse. So good on you, Mr. Lewis. You probably scored points by being so dumb, but congratulations. You are dumb criminal contestant of the day. And guess what? If you, after Friday, go head-to-head and compete with all our other contestants for the dumb criminal contestant of the day, for the overall dumb criminal contestant winner of the week, that's right, you could win a lawyer crime talk mug. Look at that. That's right. It could be yours at no expense to you. You don't even have to steal it, and you can drink from it wearing your Gronkowski jersey all day long. Just don't do it at the jailhouse or in Walmart. All right, Mr. Lewis, promise. Promise me that, please. Please. All right. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.